Okay, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It is Sunday, January 16th, 2011. Continuing with Politics of Exclusion in Judaism, we're up to page 300, Source Sheets, Rambam, Hilchot Tshuva 3:11. Dana, you want to take us with the English?
Number 5.
I'm sorry, source number 6 on page 3, Rambam 3:11. We're continuing a bit with, we're a little bit out of the theological area, and you'll notice how this halacha deals a little bit more with social exclusion. But not one where we kick you out as much as, consequences of decisions you make. Go ahead.
One who separates from the ways of the community, even if he did not violate any commandments, but separates from the community of Israel and does not do mitzvahs among them and does not enter with them in their times of trouble and does not fast with their fasts, but rather goes along his own path like one of the nations of the world, as if he was not like one of the... Damn, this is a long sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was not like one of them, Jews, he loses his share in the world to come. One who sins with a strong hand like Eliakim, whether he violated a light or strict commandment, has no share in the world to come. And this is called unveiling the face of Torah, for he has brazenly revealed his face and is not embarrassed from the face of Torah.
Yeah. All right. We all get that. Do a quick summary here that it's, we're not talking here about even if he didn't violate any commandments, but rather he separated himself from the Jewish community. And it's not that he's not doing mitzvot, but he sort of puts himself isolated, separated from Adat Yisrael. Right? And other things of, he doesn't, lo nichnas b'tzartan, he doesn't consider the afflictions of lam lo mit'arne b'ta'anitan, he doesn't fast with their fasts. What do you think about this?
Probably a lot of Jews that go to synagogues do the same thing, but nobody knows about it because they keep their mouth shut.
But if you go to synagogue, are you separating yourselves from the Jewish community?
Well, the guy can go on a fast day and not fast, and nobody, not mention it. And I don't know if they're keeping accounts upstairs in the Shemayim, but he passes muster with most of the humans.
Mm. Well, yeah.
There's also a thing... And also a thing of the people who will tell you in shul, oh, I don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we're already, starting to ask things. I mean, Ed raises up this great point here of establishing it, putting in today's context about going to shul. One thing that I'd like to clarify maybe is this thing about ta'anit, about fasts. There are certain fast days that we're halakhically obligated to fast. Right, the biblical ones, you've got Yom Kippur, and the rabbinic ones, Tisha B'Av, Tzom Gedalia, all that straight down, Tanis Esther, even more minor, we consider that rabbinic-ish, even though it's a light one, Asar B'Tevet, Shavas B'Tammuz, stuff like that. You also have every now and again a communal fast, where a community will say, we are establishing a fast day for this and this reason. You'll find it happens every now and again in Israel, where people will, communal say, we're having a fast per se rain. There was some fast that happened, where was it, in 2001, 2002, I know it was in Israel at the time. I completely forget the context, but I know that there was some fast behind it. And I think that's more of what it means as ta'anitam is their fast, because he's saying that even if you don't violate any averot, whereas if you say break the fast of Shivasar B'Tammuz, you're violating a rabbinic prohibition, right? Which would be, Yisur D'Rabbanan. So I think it's more of the community side of Parish Min HaTzibur. You're separating yourself from the community. Now, the politics in here, I'll just add with, one question for discussion is, how do you define community?
Right. Are you obligated to go along with the herd? Any bunch of jokers that show up in a shul, they're binding on me? No, I don't think so.
Interesting question. Any thoughts on that? How do you?
I guess I assume things were more uniform in those, but maybe not.
They were and they weren't. They were uniform in the sense that you didn't have you had sectarianism, but you didn't really have denominationalism. Meaning, when you had people, I mean, we discussed a bit about sectarianism with Tzedukim and Baitusim, Karaites, or whatever you want to call that, who were, you know, given a classification of, we're on source number 6. We're given sort of a classification of a distinction, like, you know, these are, you know, followers of rabbinic Judaism, and they're everyone else. Today, you've got a lot of people that still claim to follow Judaism, qua Judaism, but different spins on it. You know, you've got, you know, obviously, you know, Reconstructionists are a little bit different because they at least, you know, will say that we don't believe in mitzvot. That, it, you know, we don't actually, that we're doing these things not because there's a God who commands us, but because it's part of our culture. So we can put them in, you know, slightly separate categories, a little bit different. Reform and conservative. Conservative more than reform will claim to be following the tradition just in their own way, as we discussed last week. You've got what you would call, even in Orthodox, you've got modern Orthodox, you've got more right-wing Orthodox in various forms, various Haredi, various nuances and gradations of yeshivish. You've got Hasidic versus Misnagdic, right? Both we would consider Orthodox in some way. What would you consider Tzibor for any of those? I mean, in the time of Rambam, I'm not sure if you had the same established definitions. It wasn't that, you know, he disagreed with people, but it wasn't as formalized. You couldn't necessarily put a name to it. Or if you did put a name to it, it was sort of sectarianism. It was only when we get to the denominationalism that you have things, you know, that distinction kind of breaking down a bit. But so in that respect, yes, there was a little bit more uniformity because you really had rabbinic Judaism or you didn't.
Well, I don't know that defining community as the people who show up in shul on any given Shabbos morning, but how about something along the lines of those who live and work, whatever, those who live in the general vicinity of where you are, and...
You want some time to think about it?
I'm coming.
All right, take some time to think about it. George, you got something?
Just the word uniform philosophies, I mean, the main religious philosophies.
Yeah.
There's nothing else. Everybody was sort of...
Right. You hadn't, you know, it wasn't, say, as established, but let it say today, right? What does it mean to be coming from a Darte Tzibur, right? You're separating from the ways of, you know, it's not even Darte HaTzibur of the community, it's the ways of community. Today, you could have issues of, you know, let's say, do you put up an eruv or do you not put up an eruv, right? You can say, well, the established community practice was not to have an eruv. You come in, you put up an eruv, or you're going against the community, or alternatively, are you starting your own community? Let's say what happened in Washington Heights, right? You had the Breuer's community that, you know, was there for quite a few years. A lot of young people moved in, you know, tried to work with Breuer's about putting up an eruv, you know. Breuer's was either, from the people, the friends of mine who were instrumental in putting it up, they asked Breuer's, what's the problem, can we deal with it? And at the end, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, even the local rabbis didn't have an issue with it was at the time it went up, the newer, you know, I hesitate to use the word immigrants, but the newer residents in the on Washington Heights outnumbered the established Breuer's community. So which, you know, in terms of, you know, Orthodox observant Jews, who's really considered the majority at that point? Can the community switch? Yeah.
I can't think of an English equivalent, really. How about those who are regularly in your Dalet office?
All right, so let's say you apply that to the Stanton Street Shul.
Yeah.
How does that help? I mean, you're basically saying you can't go away from the Stanton Street Shul, but let's say we do something here that annoys you and it makes you go to another shul. Are you poorish from the Tzibur when you find another one? Or
no,
let's say something at the Alistarkers takes you up.
You're changing Tziburim.
Ah, so changing Tziburim isn't necessarily... that's a great chiluk. Changing a Tzibur isn't the same as being poorish. Someone doesn't like one shul, you go to another shul. Is that really considered being poorish? So then what would you define as really being poorish as opposed to switching?
If you stay within a Dalet Amos and purposely kind of either in your face or maybe not so much in your face, continue to frequent the place from which you diverge.
But if you're frequenting the place which you diverge, you're not really diverging. Because
no,
you're still there.
Stanton Street Shul has Minhag X, you don't like Minhag X. You don't do Minhag X. Matter of fact, you're a little bit in your face. You tell the person sitting next to you, yeah, I don't do that. That's not cool.
Do you think that's punishment at Seaboard?
If you continue to stay there and are in your face about it.
Okay, so it's, so if I'm understanding, the definition is your community, however you define your community, is doing something and you don't want to partake of it.
Or like, and you continue to stay there despite that and kind of...
So would you say someone who, let's say, shows up to show on Shabbos but not during the week would be partying at Seabor?
No, how about like this? This is a great one and I've been guilty of it myself.
Okay.
I have to say. You purposely and perhaps a little too loudly say something in the nusach you're used to when the shul doesn't.
You mean privately?
No. You're in shul.
Ah.
The tzibur says brithu and you obnoxiously and loudly say amen.
Well, I mean, here it's I would consider part of minhag hamakom of people doing what they want. So, I mean, I answer amen following the Shulchan Aruch too. So
right,
you're actually following the rabbi.
But there are some places.
Right.
Don't do that. And
so you would say even like, let's say you're in a place that davens nusach Ashkenaz, and you say it's mach per kane bikaris mishiachay in kane.
Right.
So for you, that would be you're defining that as parish meinat sibor.
Oh yeah, because that's obnoxious. They don't do that. They don't like
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah.
You know better.
It seems like the important things are that separates from the community of Israel and does not do mitzvahs among them
mm-hmm.
and does not enter with them
mm-hmm.
in times of trouble. So it means you can be off on your own corner doing mitzvah, but you Jews are being slaughtered in the street and ignored. So that would put you outside of that
mm-hmm. Yeah, my more on point.
My reading is a little bit closer to what George just said, in that, you know, based on the language of the Rambam, it's not that, you know, you go to shul and you do like another minhag, because the truth is, I mean, there are other halachot of minhag hamakom, which is a whole other shir. And certainly in a place like Stan Street, where we tend to be as accommodating as possible to various minhagim, as you know, we said here, we daven nisah sard, and one frequent question I got was, are you allowed to just daven nisah Ashkenaz, to which I said privately, absolutely, but if you're davening for the Amud, you know, daven nusach Sfard, and you know, that's fine, you know, same basic God you're praying to, and pray any way you're comfortable, just, you know, from the Amud have to do it this way. Mm-hmm. But here we're talking about where you're almost, you're isolating yourself from the Jewish community entirely in the global sense. Almost like you might be keeping mitzvot, but you are almost nationally unaffiliated. You lose that sense of peoplehood, or for lack of a better term, Jewish identity, where you could still be doing mitzvot, but like you don't care, as you say, what happens to the rest of the world. It could be, it does make an interesting point there about the minyan, because, you know, where would minyan fall into this category? Because you're still doing mitzvot, you're just removing yourself from any sort of social affiliation.
I think he's looking at even larger issues than just.
Yeah, he's looking at the larger issues. I mean, not fasting with their fasts is basically that you might be doing the mitzvah, you might be doing everything God tells you to do, but you've cut yourself off from the Jewish people mentally. Like, these are no longer your people, these are no longer your brothers. And when you talk about, say, even denominationalism, right, following, I guess, that language of Rambam, you know, even you know, Reform conservative and certainly Reconstructionist, I mean, wouldn't fall into this case, because the whole thing is, you know, with Reconstructionism, following Mordechai Kaplan, title of his book, Judaism as Civilization. What civilization if not peoplehood? So you may or may not be doing the mitzvot, or you may not be thinking you're doing mitzvot, but you still consider yourselves part of the Jewish people and part of the Jewish nation. Whereas once you remove yourself from that, you know, conceptually, even if you might still be doing mitzvot, my read is that's what Rambam is saying, is parish midarkei tzibur. Right? You're just withdrawing yourself from Jewish community, capital J, capital C, however you might even want to define that. Make sense? Any thoughts on that? Head and down.
I was thinking of Hitler.
Yeah.
The Jews might consider a guy a rebel and excommunicate him from their religion. But who the hell are they? Hitler would consider the guy who was excommunicated still a Jew and put him in a gas chamber. And I think Hitler would be correct in identifying the guy as a Jew, because you can't erase it just because a bunch of Batinskis decided moralistically he's not one of us, but expel him.
Well, we're not saying, we're not even saying here about someone who is expelled from the Jewish community. This is a conscious effort that someone makes. I mean, this isn't where we kicked you out of top courage. Someone makes a conscious decision, I'm no longer part of the Jewish community.
I don't even think that is possible. You get a guy who was born from a Jewish mother and a Jewish father, to make it stronger, had the bris, and he grows up, he says, this is all crap, I'm joining Jews for Jesus or whatever. He's still a Jew. He may not.
Okay. Well,
may not admit it, but by me, he's still a Jew.
So that's a great point too. There, Rambam isn't saying he's not halakhically Jewish. He's saying he loses his share in the world to come, whatever that might mean. Not unlike the things with Karid, in the sense that
a legal issue, it's a communal issue.
Exactly. It's not a legal issue. It's not a communal issue. There's no associated punishment you'll have for this. And again, like where the Rambam is getting the source from, I'm honestly not entirely sure. He uses this idiom.
People had a high regard for him.
One second. It says here, by Unikram Megalepanim B'Torah. It says you're revealing the face of Torah, which the Gemara defines one place as, you know, embarrassing someone, as we saw, you know, weeks ago. It's not a matter of, I'm not even sure what you mean, like, in terms of him really imposing something. What he's talking about more is the consequence. If you remove yourself from the Jewish community, right, then you lose your share in the world to come. It's not that we're expelling you. It's not even that we have any means by which to punish you. And we'll see in the last halacha, he does believe that, you know, there's a point of teshuvah and repentance. There's that seemingly if you decide to come back and do teshuvah, you're fine. There's no issue in this halacha of authority. It's if someone wants to get up and leave, they lose their share in the world to come, but there's no practical consequence on the ground in this, you know, day and age, at least. There's nothing you can bring him up on charges for because he's not going to be there.
There's social stigma. If people talk behind his back, those that believe in a world to come, they say, oh, he's out of the world to come. He's not one of us.
Interesting point about, you know, talk about them behind their back. Dan, you had something?
Probably it's just early morning. Lots of thoughts are going through incoherently. But I started thinking along the lines of what you just said. we're talking about the politics of exclusion.
Yeah.
And Rambam is not advocating excluding him. He's just saying someday in the future he'll get his.
Right.
There was a social thing in the shul in which I sort of. People would gossip, for lack of a better word.
Really? In a shul?
No. I'm
shocked.
No. But in this particular manner, in this particular theme, hey, I haven't seen so-and-so in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And if the response was something like, oh, he's not from anymore, pretty much the equivalent of saying he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Really, no more need to talk about him.
Oh, I don't know, you know, that community, you know,
well,
how that...
But, I mean, I've seen the phenomenon elsewhere.
Of, like, writing people off altogether? Well, you got Fiddler on the Roof, someone intermarries, you know, sit Shiva for him and whatnot.
That's a little wrong.
You know, but the logic behind it is, someone left, here you're not even talking about someone leaving the faith here,
yeah.
Right? Because this person could still be keeping mitzvot, he just doesn't want any sort of part of you. So it's a little bit different. You know, it's like saying, being more like, oh, I haven't seen someone in shul anymore. It's like, yeah, he doesn't come to shul anymore. Right? That doesn't mean he's not from. I mean, you might look at that, you know, negatively, but it still is, you know, a little bit different. It doesn't come to any shul anymore. It's a type of character you probably don't find that often today anymore, except perhaps on a college campus, where someone might be, you know, fully religious and observant, but wants nothing to do. I don't know. It would even seem to be about the nationalism, if you would have to have no Jewish identity, which seems really strange if you think about it. Because why would you be doing mitzvot if you don't associate with the Jewish people in some way? Like on zero levels. And when he says here, you know, Ela holech bitarko ke'echad migoyei ha'aretz, that if he's just going it alone like any other person in the world, right, and he's still doing mitzvot, it seems kind of strange, like, if to say that, to put those two things together, even though he's not violating anything, meaning he's still going to be keeping kosher, and he's still going to be doing all these ritual stuff and say all the social stuff necessary, it's kind of strange, don't you think?
Again, you come back to, he does not enter with them in their times of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really have to dissociate yourself from a group to see when, if they're suffering, and you walk away from it.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, yeah.
He's also weakening the community.
How so? Just by leaving?
Well,
you could say you could say the exact opposite, that you would it's addition by subtraction. That if the guy's just going to be there and, you know, be a drag, better he leave. It's like the freeloader problem in economics, right? Better that they, if they're not there, like, if someone's not producing, you also don't want the person using up resources. So this person isn't going to contribute, might as well leave and not take up space. Dan?
I'm trying to imagine what the situation might be.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, let's say, maybe somebody moves into a community from afar for business reasons. He now has to live there, and the people are just totally unlike him. And he says, these are a bunch of businessmen. I'm an intellectual. I can't even daven with them.
Mm.
So he's alone, but then maybe some other people move in, and he finds that there are other people who sort of feel that way, and he gets his own community. And so to me, what the sound of this is more like Ein Hatzara Niknet Ela B'Chavura, that you can't be a Jew by yourself. You have to have a community. It doesn't have to be this community. And that's that. To me, that's the feeling.
Well, you raise a great line. I'm not sure if you ever heard this joke. I forget where I first heard it, but the line goes that the people I talk to, I can't daven with, and the people I daven with, I can't talk to. I think there's, you know, there could be something there. I mean, you think about, like, all the mitzvot. There's certain mitzvot that you do, that we have, that require being part of a community, like, say, tzedakah, right? How are you supposed to give charity when you're not affiliated with people?
Privately into something not Jewish.
Okay, matanot levyonim.
See a homeless guy on the street.
But he has to be Jewish. And in order for you to be Yotzei Matzonot Le'Avyonim, the guy's to be Jewish, there's somewhat of a dispute whether or not you can fulfill your obligation of tzedakah by giving to non-Jews. Meir seems to think yes. Other opinions I've seen seem to think no.
So yesh al milusmot.
For tzedakah, for Matzonot Le'Avyonim, has to be Jewish.
Even for the sake of peace?
That's for tzedakah, not for matanot levyonim. Matanot levyonim is a certain gift to the poor that's independent of tzedakah. So if you have money, the separate law. Meiri actually says, the Gemara says you give charity to non-Jews, mipnei darkei shalom, because this is the ways of peace. And Meiri, so some people interpret the ways of peace as, like Meiri, that you're actually fulfilling your obligation of charity. Others say, no, it's distinct. Meaning you do this for the ways of peace, but you have separate religious obligations specifically for Jews.
So what if you say, all right, fine, I'll give Matanos Levyon, and that's my once a year.
But then you haven't been separated from the Tzibur. Meaning,
but I won't do anything else.
But you can't be half pregnant. I mean, the only way you can give to a Jew is if you say, I recognize that he's a Jew, I'm recognizing that I'm doing this because I'm a Jew, and I have to do this, you know, because he's one of us. And to say, well, you know, I'll come out of it, then you can say, like, for that one instant, he, like, gets his Olam Haba back and then goes back to not having it. So if he dies, like, at that right moment when he gives it over, he's okay.
That's not even
Ashur. I mean, it's a catch-22. I'm not entirely sure about how, you know, Rambam might construct this. But you can definitely see today, at least, you know, how an idiom like Parish Midarkei Tzibur can be used, you know, a little bit more cynically, you know, kind of like Ed would have suggested, of you can't do anything to deviate from the community defined by us, even if it's a dual mitzvah, because if you do, that's objectively bad, because we're going to determine what your community is for you.
What about the Mitzvah? Is he removed from community? Does he leave it because he doesn't follow what the Rebbeim said?
You mean if, like, someone doesn't want to give his wife a get, and the Beis Din says he's not giving his wife a get? So the truth is, it really, you know, if there was one national basin that everyone could rely on, in theory, yes. Today, since, you know, there's so much cynicism regarding Batei Dinim, if someone goes to another, first off, if someone goes to another shul, right, packs up and leaves, you know, they may not be able to enforce it. And if someone comes to another shul and says, yeah, this basin did it, but they're all corrupt, you know, it's not out of the realm of people's experience that you've got corrupt or incompetent Batei Dinim. That, you know, it's still one guy's word versus someone else. There's no reason to assume that this Beit Din acted properly, and you need to back that up more.
In theory, does that put you outside the community?
That would be more of a cherem issue than you removing yourself. And you know, we had the whole shiur where we went through Moed Katan about, you know, cherem in the Gemara.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I still put on tefillin and I observe Shabbos. I do well, mitzvahs, but
well, there's actually a machloket about the tefillin and stuff. The Gemara in Moed Katan went through a couple of topim about that. Discusses if you are in cherem, comparing you to say someone who's in mourning or someone who's a leper. And yeah, there's I think Art School provides a nice little chart about, you know, which qualities happens to which. So sort of, but this is a little bit different. This is, you know, you picking up and moving, but you can definitely see why the politics are involved, you know, and how this could be used today to ensure communal conformity. I'd use the term that, you know, the terms of achdus and pluralism are basically both buzzwords to elicit conformity, and they mean pretty much the same thing. Achdus is a way of saying we should all be unified. The subtext being, you should give up your opinion to mine. Because if unity was really what was driving us, I could just as easily change my opinion to match yours. And if you're talking about pluralism, it's another way of saying, well, you ought to accept my opinion. Because if you really believed in the multiplicity of opinions, then I ought to extend to you the right to disagree with me. And people will use these idioms or to say, well, you know, by tyranny of the majority, that as long as you have a 51% majority, say, oh, well, this defines what a tzibur does, and therefore we're going to impose the same on every single other person to the point where if you deviate even slightly or go elsewhere, you're no longer considered one of us. Which is very different than what the Rambam is saying now. He's not saying, you know, trying to stress you to do conformity. There's an issue, you know, does believe about being part of a community, being participatory in what a community does. You know, and he's giving examples here of, you know, big things that would remove you. Like, I'll throw in a plug for this now. After Shir, we're having a blood drive, you know, for the shul. Recommend everyone who can stick around and you're healthy enough, please donate blood. Is everyone in the shul going to donate blood? Probably not, you know, assuming to show up. Does that mean that they're parish min hatzibur from doing the mitzvah? I'm not going to extend it that far. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that people do still might be affiliated with, you know, the shul. Just because you don't participate in one particular chesed event, I'm not going to, you know, say write you off entirely. But you can easily see how in another shul they can say, well, this shul is doing this. If you don't participate, we're going to write you off. And, or our community, our vod, our rabbi say X, Y, and Z. If you don't follow them 100%, you're porish mitzibor. Now, you could be porish from their tzibor, but not porish from the, you know, the global arching tzibor. Yeah. Yeah?
No.
Nope, nothing. All right. Cool. Wow, so we'll actually do two halacha today. Awesome. George.
Seven?
Yeah, seven. This is Rambam Hilchot Teshuva 312.
Two are considered informers. One, turning over one's friend to a non-Jew, either to have him killed or beaten. And two, turning over his fellow Jew's property to the non-Jew or to an enforcer who is like a non-Jew. Either of these people have a share in the world to come.
Yeah.
Neither of them
have a share in the world to come. So in short, to be a moser is you're giving gufo or mamano, a person or his property, to secular government. If you do that, according to, well, not just according to Rambam, according to Gemara, you lose your share in the world to come. Big, big, big issues in halacha here about this. One, criminal cases. Right? Comes up a lot. Let's say, you know, you have a sex offender in your community. Let's say you have a murderer in your community, turning them in, considered Mesira. Let's say you have a tax cheat, ratting them out. All of these things, you know, would be discussed through this issue of Mesira. You know, and have to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. And, you know, certain issues of, say, a sex offender, you can say that there's a matter of pikuach nefesh, that you're putting other people's lives at risk, in which case pikuach nefesh would be docheh, would push off laws of mesirah. Yeah, George, want to...
Back.
Okay.
Can I?
Sure.
Back to this one. First of all, I wondered, can I research the term? Is it a Talmudic term, Megaleh Panim b'Torah?
Yes.
Okay.
Search up Megaleh Panim. Research. Yes.
Okay.
Of course. Go ahead.
And then. But it is Talmudic.
Yes. Yeah. It is rabbinic.
And the second thing is, I mean, you still sort of haven't answered. Is this really the politics of separation when you say this is a category where the punishment is losing your share in the world to come?
In a sense, it is. Or I would say that because, yes and no. Because
is community casting him out?
It's not so much the community casting him out, but it shows that you are removing yourself from it. And in a way, it's like everything else beforehand of the community isn't saying you're gone. It's you took a step to remove yourself. And the reason why, you know, also to start with this Rambam is, and I've been dropping, you know, certain hints to him for the past several weeks, is that you will find these idioms used later on somewhat differently. Meaning, Porish Minat Tzibur is going to take on a very different tone later generations. You know, things of what is an Afikaris, what is a Min, is going to take on different meanings in different generations. Whereas in the time of the Rambam, in order for you to, you know, come into that category, you needed to make that declarative statement. Not just think it, not ask a question, but to say, I believe X. Right? So, you know, yes and no. We're seeing a little more of it than we might have seen in the Gemara, you know, or phrased a little bit differently, and it's going to take us in different directions in, you know, subsequent generations.
And also this the concept of Moser.
Yeah.
I mean, here, it's a question of losing your share in the Olam Haba.
Yeah.
Are there also when you declare somebody as a Moser, are there more immediate penalties?
As there were immediate penalties, I'd actually have to double check. I honestly did not, you know, the truth is I wasn't planning on doing, you know, this halachot, right. You know, we've only been doing one a day. I'll have to look into that in terms of what exactly are the punishments and the range of things with Mitzirah, but it is considered an incredibly, you know, serious matter. I honestly don't remember. Minimally, I would think at least Makat Mardut if it would be, you know, rabbinic and the like, but I shouldn't even say that. You know what, let me just hold off on that until I can do proper research. How's that? On exactly what's involved in Mesirah.
He doesn't seem very big on defining other punishments, at least here. Losing a share in the world to come, you know, that is. He's obligated to pay money or to get beaten.
Well, he's not going to, well, because there's a certain degree of separation here. I mean, we talked about doing a Avodah Zarah before, yeah. Right? He didn't say the punishment for a Avodah Zarah is you kill him. It's just, you know, in terms of these are the people who lose their share in the world to come. Some of them may be more severe, you know, and less severe,
yeah.
Right? But that doesn't mean that, you know, they wouldn't have separate punishments elsewhere.
But he's not mentioning any of them. So.
Because it's not the place for it.
Yeah.
Meaning, when you discuss the certain place for it, sometimes, like, certain things like Parish Minat Tzibur, as far as I know, there is something called Makat Mardut, which we described, you know, when we were discussing Hilchot Sanhedrin Hilchot Mamrim, about when you violate a rabbinic law, or if you have a local court, they're allowed to exert corporal punishment for certain deviations for, you know, specific edicts. So, you know, Dana, if you were in a situation where this person getting up and leaving would have caused the community harm, then a local Beitin would have a theoretical justification to give him Makot Mardut, lashes of rebellion. This isn't the place he's discussing it. Here he's discussing just here are people who lose their share in the world to come, which does have a certain implicit degree of exclusion in terms of spirituality, in the sense that you're no longer really considered part of us. Like Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek LeOlam Haba is, you know, what the Mishnah says, that every Jew has a share in the world to come. So here when it's and Chutz, and then it lists a bunch of exceptions, you know, the implication being is like, on one hand, you're still Jewish. On the other hand, we're not really considering you as part of us. And in this, you know, in 312, you know, let's put the, you know, civil punishments aside. You're putting yourself in a situation where you're ignoring the courts and you're basically turning, you know, you're turning your back on, you know, you're backstabbing your own people by turning them in. Now, again, today, it gets a little bit more complicated, and things have to be done on a case, like really have to evaluate on a case-by-case basis, because Masira is significant. Some people will even say, I'll tell you some things I've heard. Actually, you know what? We'll hold off on the rest of doing Masira until I can do more research, and then I can, you know, throw in some more halach and more applications, if that's okay, so I can look up some more stuff on that.
Jews are generally minority in where they work. Rambam's fine. So if a Jew is guilty of murder or a Goslin or being a Ganef, what would Rambam...
Even if Jews are in a minority, if Jews are in their own distinct community...
They can't exact punishment, or they can't correct a situation. And only
I would disagree slightly, because like you look at the shtetl in Europe, right? Yes, the Jews might have been a minority, but if you are in your closed enclave, then you're going to mete out your own communal justice.
Was anybody ever executed? Or I mean, did they?
To my knowledge, no. I mean, in the time of the Gemara, people were really so you didn't really have executions, but. That doesn't necessarily... truth is, I don't know in terms of, how they would handle such things to let murderers go free, or how they would do such things.
Taking the law into their own hands?
Well, it's not so much taking your law into your own hands if you had, say, a local base then that, really sat down and adjudicated
everything. From the outside, they'd say, you can't do this.
Oh, you mean if the civil court said, we're not going to let you rule your own cases and you have no other choice? I don't know, because if you reach your own settlements, internally, you don't have to issue charges. It's like today. You don't have to take someone to civil court. If you go to, say, a beis din, you sign a thing for arbitration to settle your civil issues. Now, a beis din doesn't have any authority for criminal issues. I mean, well, if you think someone stole money from you, you could take for a beis din to get your money back, but obviously beis din isn't going to imprison them. I would even say that there's some civil cases that are well beyond the purview of beis din, like, say, Madoff, right? Madoff's a good example. Madoff is Jewish, right? He, scammed a lot of Jews. Now, given the enormity of what he did, I know of no beis din that has either the resources or the expertise to unravel it, given that professionals and a huge team of forensic accountants and all that have difficulty unraveling anything. I don't see how a beis din could possibly, handle that.
But if let's say, take something a little bit smaller. If the beis din were to say, you have paid back twice, but going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
But civil authorities would say, hey, wait a minute, he broke the law.
So there's a difference of if the civil authority gets wind of it and puts him in jail, that's on them, but are you allowed to turn them in?
Oh, okay.
That's what we're talking about here. We're not saying that the civil authority doesn't have a right to prosecute. The question is, are you, let's say your neighbor cheated on his taxes, you report them to the IRS. Let's say someone's in a messy divorce and they did something wrong. So I said, I'm going to turn him over, because he's a tax cheat. Very different example there. If the IRS finds out on his own, he's going to be stuck. I'm in no way saying that, we are supposed to protect someone if we don't. Halakha, to my knowledge, does not take the opinion that when the IRS goes after, a corrupt yeshiva, we don't go in the paper and say they're doing it because of anti-Semitism. Right? We're not, not all cases are like that. Sometimes yeshiva can actually be corrupt.
There's been
several cases along those lines, some in recent memory. And we're not saying that we protect, but there's a difference between protecting versus proactively turning someone in. I heard one story about a case of, one particular community where a man either killed his wife or took out a contract to kill his wife. And Rabbi had to set up a sting operation where he did not actually turn the person in, but got the guy to confess while he was wearing a wire in a way that wouldn't have broken confidentiality. And, trying to skirt the issues, which, again, are fairly fairly complicated. But we'll hold off on a bigger discussion of this year until next week. It might be a little bit of digression for, the politics of exclusion, but it's, a good enough topic to do on its own.
And, throw in there the question of... what do you do if the community is not punishing a repeat pedophile?
Right. So with something like that, I can tell you right off the bat, one way of getting, not even getting around the problem, is simply to say, this is a matter of pikuach nefesh. People's lives are in danger, and there's a risk of recidivism of in danger. I know for sex crimes, recidivism rate is very high, right? So if you're jeopardizing, you know, people's lives, you're allowed to break Jewish law. If it's another case of a guy killed his wife because, I don't know, one specific reason, is that person at risk to kill again? You know, probably not, because his wife's already dead, but you still also don't want someone who killed their wife walking free. So we'll talk about that a little bit more next week. It'll be a little bit of a diversion, but, you know, it'll be a fun one.
Well, who's to say that the guy who killed his wife, if somebody found out that the guy killed his wife, maybe there's a chance that the one who murdered his wife would murder the potential informer, too.
I don't know. We'll talk about this more next week. We'll actually go through, you know, primary sources and Hilchot Mesirah. How's that?
Cool.
All right, we'll do some Tshuvot. So we're going to put a slight little pause here and do Hilchot Mesirah to understand this thing a little better.
In one case, turning over one's friend, he uses the word friend, then fellow Jew, are they really synonymous, or is he making a subtle distinction?
No, this is the same. Chavir is considered.
The Hebrew is the same in both cases.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Never rely on my translation. Yeah, that's why I put in the Hebrew here, too. I translate it for readability sometimes. I know it's hard to believe.
Now I see the two words, Chavir.
Yeah. All right, excellent. So, yeah, slight diversion next week. We're going to talk about Hilchot Mesirah and then back to our normal schedule the week after, unless we get off on a cooler tangent. All right, see you all next week. Have a good one. Tuesday, we've got Husu and the Talmud discussing the death of Rabbi Akiva. If anyone's interested in around, it'll be posted online. And if anyone could stick around for the blood drive, it would be greatly appreciated. I know that I personally will be a proud member of the Gallon Club, so not going to tell you to do anything that I won't be doing myself. And have a wonderful week.
Yeah.